everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. In today's episode, we are going to continue the conversation I had with Denise Fenzi, which we started in the prior episode. Thanks again so much to Denise for sharing her time with us, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the conversation.
Corey, you were going to tell about Reka. You mentioned that at the beginning. Do you even remember?
I don't.
You said there's a story there.
Oh, you want to hear this story? It's kind of terrible.
I don't know. You told me there was a story.
Yeah. So Reka, super drivey, fun dog. But I didn't really socialize her. Like, I didn't let her look around. I took her a lot of places, but I made her work, always working. And that was fine because she liked to work. But she really didn't see stuff. And when she was about 21 months old, I took her to her first AKC trial. She had already titled in IGP. So I'm like, oh, this should be fine. But she felt a little flat and I didn't pay attention. Boy, I wouldn't make that mistake now, but I sure did then. She didn't feel very good. And we get to the ring and she wasn't even that interested in like playing, which is huge for her. And I decided to show anyway, because I'm being mindless. And she looked at the judge, and the judge was a big guy with a trench coat and a hat. And my dog went, oh my God. And the thing that the story came from somewhere else, but one thing I learned from that is socialization means looking at things, not distracting your dog with a toy. Because then she looked back at me like, well, just give me my toy and it'll be all right. And I'm like, well, honey, unfortunately, I don't actually have your toy. So, and she ended up healing backwards for part of that because she was nervous about him. So she literally turned around to watch him. And then on the recall, she got to front and she turned around to watch the judge. Just if anybody cares to know, you can qualify when your dog does these things. She did indeed qualify. But I was so spooked and so stressed. And I learned a lot after that about socialization and making sure dogs feel comfortable in a space. You know, that's where I really got a lot of my ideas about engagement and making sure that dogs properly acclimate before you ask them to do things. Make sure that they're ready. Don't beg. Don't use toys to pull it out of them. Let them let you know, okay, I'm ready now. Now I can do things. And when she was, gosh, she must've been 3.5 or 4. It was like 2 years later. I was like, well, I got to go back eventually. Didn't want to, but I have to go back eventually. And I took her to a show and she immediately started to pull the grass out and didn't want her ball. And it was like, oh my God, here we go again. But now I had vowed, I had been talking to a friend a lot as I worked through this process. And I had said, I will not take her in the ring. If she doesn't want to be there, we're not doing this. I'll just pull. So there's like, I don't know, a few dogs in front of me or whatever. And all she wants to do is rip up the grass. And every once in a while I'd offer her a toy and she'd be like, no, thank you. And I was like, don't beg, don't, just wait. It's, if I have to pull, I have to pull. And then at some point she's like, all right, I'm done. I'm ready. And she looks up at me. She goes, let's do it. I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, let's do it. All right, really? You sure? She's like, absolutely. So I gave her her ball and she's like, yeah, no, I'm ready to go. So we went in the ring and she did very well. So she got 199.5 and she won that trial. And there was 2 trials in one day.
Very well.
So I went to the next trial. She got 199.5. She won that trial. Then there was a runoff for high-end trial. She won that. She won everything. So 2 weeks later, because I did get a leg the first time, she now had her CD. So I moved her up to open for the next trial. I show up on the trial grounds and she starts pulling out the grass and I'm like, awesome. It worked out really well for us. So she didn't do quite as well, but she did very, very well anyway. And that dog ended up becoming an obedience champion, a reasonable amount of time later. But one of the most important things I learned with that dog was let the dog opt in, make sure the dog wants to be there. Because if it's in the dog and they feel good, you'll get great results. I think most of us, we are able to get the work into the dog. The dog knows in pristine conditions what we want. But getting it back out again in complex circumstances, that's a whole different thing. And to me, that's where the challenge lies, especially if you're starting with a more talented type of a dog, you know, that already brings a lot to the table. But man, getting what you get in your backyard in the ring, wow, that's just like, that's such a space.
That's my holy grail.
It's such a space.
With every dog. Like, that's why I train. That's why I actually compete, because I don't really, believe it or not, love competing that much. But like you said, teaching them the behaviors in my yard, to me, that's not the hard part. Getting the work, getting the same dog in the race. I mean, most people in obedience, they're just like, well, yeah, of course they're stressed out. Like, they all are. I'm like, yeah, but that's not what I want. I want my dog. I want a happy dog. I want a dog that is relatively relaxed. It's I want the same dog in the ring that I have in my yard.
Yes, and that's so my grail. I've never had it, but I sure hope I get it someday. But I really, I'm the same.
You didn't have it with her, isn't she the one I saw you in Long Beach with?
Rega?
Yeah.
Yes.
That wasn't her.
And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, because I remember exactly, you were coming out of a room and I was passing you and you stopped me and you said, I just want to tell you that I really like watching you work your dog. You made my day. You made my week. You made my year. I told everybody, I told anybody who would even listen, that you said something to me and that you liked my dog and how I worked with my dog. Oh my God. It was like, life change. It was the heavens opened up and the angel spoke to me. It was amazing.
Well, I have to tell you, I think that I want to say that was my first year there. Do you remember what year it was?
It wasn't your first year, because you had won with Tyler before.
Well, I do remember that. Well, I remember the first year I won, because this was like kind of like, I don't even know if YouTube was around then or not. Like, I'd never been into an NOC. I was brand new. I was new to the sport. And the NOC was in California. So, like, all we had back then was, like, I can't even remember the magazine, maybe Front and Finish. I don't know. You just read about people. But, like, I didn't know what their dogs look like or work like. And I went over there thinking, oh, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to see all these like amazing working dogs. Like, I was like starstruck. I was so excited. And much to my dismay, most of the dogs were not animated. Like, they were very workmanlike, or they weren't happy at all, or, you know, they just didn't look happy. They weren't a pleasure to watch. You know, and so she really stuck out, because like I just saw her in a few rings and I was like, oh, well, I don't know who that is, but that dog's happy. Yay.
Yeah. And, you know, she was a tricky dog to get to her otch, and she did not have her otch at that event. But at some point, Reka really wanted her toys in the ring. And when she realized she wasn't going to get them, it was a big deal. It took so much of the sparkle out. And we went through that before the NOI. And what I ended up doing with her is I took all toys and all food out of training from the point she was at about 50 points until she finished. And what I did was ring objects were all she got. So if you retrieved, I would throw your dumbbell. That was your reward. And I would tell her that. So if the exercise before the retrieve on the flat was healing and the judge was bringing me the dumbbell, I would tell her, that was excellent. Let's get your dumbbell, which was perfect, because it almost looked to the dog like I was rewarding her in the ring for her choices. But I mean, the judge is going to bring you that dumbbell twice in open.
Right.
And in utility, you're going to get the glove and you're going to get the articles. And so outside the ring, I remember one person saying, you have the weirdest warm up I have ever seen, but it works for you. And that's because I was like taking her dumbbell and hiding it behind the garbage can and stuff, or on my body, and having her find it. So with that dog, I made it about the ring objects themselves. And I never got the sparkle back that I had when I had a ball in my pocket, but it was good enough. I mean, we went through a dip, and then she was a high scoring dog, and she was, let's say, happy enough. I don't need my dog to love competing as much as they like training, but I can't have them unhappy. So there's a lot of territory between happy and unhappy. And I felt like she got there well enough, but once she finished her title, I stopped, because I was like, I don't think this is how you want to spend your time. And so we stopped, And then a couple days later, I went home and I was training her now for fun, and I brought her ball back. And I thought she was going to be so excited. And it was so interesting because I threw the ball and her glove was on the ground and she ran out and she didn't know which one to take. So after all those months, she really had developed a lot of value in the ring objects themselves. So that was just, she was just an interesting dog to sort of go through the path.
Yeah, I think, well, and that's the key. And I think that's what people need to understand is that all dogs are completely different and we can't train them all the same. I mean, I hear that a lot. People are like, oh, this one's so much harder, or this one's, you know, my other one was so easy. And I'm like, well, if you had an easy one, you should be really happy because there aren't that many of those. I think I had one. I was very lucky to have that one because I think some people never do. And all my other dogs have been really challenging, not in that they're bad dogs, just, you know, they're all completely and utterly different. And they've all had very different training challenges.
Yeah, I've definitely had more hard than easy. And I have seen some dogs that I'm like, wow, I wish that was my dog. I could do something. But I actually don't know if that's true. Because once you have it, then you discover how your training might have impacted that dog. And I do, I wonder this all the time, like the challenges I have with my Belgian now with Zen. I wonder how many of those I created by the way I chose to train him. As I'm trying to back up and try to figure out how to get out. I mean, his whole thing is just arousal. But did I cause this by my reinforcement structure? And oh my gosh, I was talking to a friend yesterday, just endlessly, like, what's the difference between addiction and obsession and drive? And then we were talking about emotions versus instinctual behaviors, and do these things matter? And just kind of went on and on and on. So it's like trying to put it in terms that made sense to me so I could try to back it out and figure out where I could start to do better. But the process is really interesting. I mean, for me, it is. I guess if my primary issue or desire was just to do very well with him, that might be different. Then I might just want to do well. But I really do want to understand. I take a lot of pleasure in overcoming the obstacles, which doesn't mean I enjoy the obstacles. I hope no one gets that in their head. I do not enjoy suffering. I do not enjoy problems. I do not. I get frustrated. But I will say that when I struggle and then I see success, that means more. When it
yes.
was hard.
So it's so that, much more because absolutely. If it were, that's what I'm saying. If this were easy, I don't think either of us would be doing it because it wouldn't be rewarding, right? What's rewarding is hard, overcoming hard things is very reinforcing for me anyway. And I think it is for most people. And I don't know. I find it fascinating that people have this weird tendency to want to avoid hard things, but yet the hard things are what makes us confident. It's what makes us resilient. And when we overcome those hard things, we feel really good about it.
Yeah, and that's probably the same as we do with dogs, right? That's how you build resilience in people and in dogs.
Sure.
You do hard things that you may not want to do. And you come out the other side and you survive. And then you go, oh, hey, I did that thing.
That's
and it was
right.
Okay.
I know. So I'm all about like do hard things all the time. Like I still like every day I'm like, I make sure I do some hard things, whether it's a workout or figuring something out. I think we should be challenging ourselves, but I just find a lot of times with students, the minute they hit like a challenge, they panic. And I'm always like, don't panic. It's okay. And then they overcome it and they feel great. And I'm like, see?
You did it.
You did it.
I call it puzzling. I think puzzling is innately reinforcing to many species, including dogs. I think they like figuring out the route. Because I don't make mistakes a problem. So if my dogs make a mistake, it's not like anything bad happens. So you can only go from neutral to right in my book, right? So you made it, if you did it wrong, that's neutral. But when you get it right, I'm going to make sure you know. And I do think that like people, solving a puzzle that's in your range. Like if you do a puzzle for a three-year-old, that's boring because it's easy. And if you do a puzzle that's 18,000 pieces and you don't know how to puzzle, then that's too hard. So if you can find the right degree of puzzling where you're struggling a little, but sometimes it gets easy and then it gets hard. And I think that dogs have a similar kind of approach. So I like my dogs to have to do some puzzling. I do a lot of errorless learning where I set out the path for the dog. But sometimes I'm really like, no, no, no. I know you can do this. I need you to stop and think about it. And I can almost see my dog like, okay, I'm going to stop and think about this, like making an effort. Mm-hmm. Like, I can do this. Yes, you can do this. Like, nothing bad's going to happen. Give it a shot. I know you can do this. And I do think dogs appreciate the opportunity to puzzle. Now, not all dogs. I mean, everything is individual, of course. Like the Border Collie, he's like, just tell me what you want. I don't like your guessing games. Tell me what you want and I'm going to do the thing. And I'm like, all right, fine. I'll just tell you what I want. That's fine. But the Belgian, I think he's all about like, he loves figuring stuff out. It's interesting for him to figure it out.
Yeah, I think, well, Zaina doesn't like, so for example, she doesn't like shaping, but she does like challenges. Like she loves when we create training challenges, right? So like, for example, throw the dumbbell and then someone's standing at the dumbbell saying, hey, she's like, ha, 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 you can't fool me. I'm going to get that dumbbell and I'm not looking at you. Like she loves that. She thinks that's awesome. And I find with all my dogs, when I start, well, we don't want to say proofing anymore because proofing is not what we do. Proofing is that old word where they made the dog wrong and then, you know, set the dog up to fail and then said, you're wrong. Like when I set up challenges that are hard and my dog has to dig a little bit, That really builds confidence in my dogs, like a huge amount of confidence. Like with Zest, like for 3 months leading up to the NOC, I was like, well, this dog's like totally not ready for an event like this. So I better do, you know, let me expose him to as many things as I can in the amount of time I have. And I'm like, and it doesn't matter if he's not ready because he needs this work anyway. And it was pretty astounding to see the change in his confidence in a relatively short amount of time, just because he was just getting all these challenges and figuring out how to win them and then winning them. And then it's like their ego, like their confidence, they change. Their whole personality changes.
I wonder how much of it is also that in a sport like obedience, where you do the same exercises all the time, like when I was training, I knew people who would set up an open ring, do open, take that away, set up a utility ring, do utility, take that away. And I'm out there with two ready jumps because it was easier. And like, I don't have a high jump. So I'm going to just take that broad jump board and put it on the edge. They'd be like, but it's the wrong, it's not even 8 inches. I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's a concept. It's the dog knows what it is, right? And the tendency in obedience is patterns. And that has to be so dull. I mean, there's only so many times you can go out and do exactly the same thing. So when you start adding some random challenges, it's got to make it more interesting. It makes it more interesting for me because I have to think up weird things to do. And I like thinking up weird things to do.
I love doing that. I never do patterns. I mean, I very rarely, the only time I'll do a pattern is when I'm teaching my dog how to chain so that my dog understands that just because you're not getting reinforced doesn't mean you're wrong. It actually means you're right and you're going to get a big jackpot. My dogs actually learn that and completely understand that. But other than that, I mean, people are horrified. Like my jumps are like never the right distance. They're always like discombobulated. I don't even have a ring most of the time. I just throw some stuff out there. I train in front of stores and random places all the time. If I just had to pattern train, I think my dogs would just be completely bored.
Yeah. You'd love Mondi obedience because it's just...
I
mean, there's so much stuff. I'll have all my Cavalettis and everything. My whole yard just looks like a junk sale. And I'll do my send away right through the center of it. And the dog's just like over and around all the crap. Like, just go to the end. Go to the end. And it's like, I think it makes them stronger. It's like, Your job is to get to the 300%. End. Yes, there's stuffed animals in the way and there's jumps and all, but you can ignore all that. You know how to get to the end. And then when the ring is pristine, it's like, wow. Yeah, I know exactly what you want me to do. There's just one jump over there. How simple is this?
Yeah, I mean, even my friend's training building, there's stuff, constantly stuff on the floor. There's just stuff everywhere. And we try to switch things up all the time. I have bins full of different things, toys that move around. Yeah, it makes it more fun. It definitely makes it more fun and more interesting. And it builds resilience, right? It teaches the dog that, yep, here's a problem. Yeah, there's something in the way, or maybe you can't see your glove, but I promise you it's out there. Go get it anyway. And then they're like, where is it? Where is it? Oh, there it is. And then we're like, yes, that was so good. And yeah, it's fun for us and it's fun for the dogs. I think it's obedience is just a mindset. I mean, I think, yeah, sure. There's still people out there. I have students that in their area, that's what people do. They do the full exercises every time. They do the full run through every time. But, you know, their dogs aren't having a great time either. You know, I think that obedience can be fun if you just break everything into pieces, if you just mix it all up, mix and match, make it challenging, and just keep it interesting for the dog. But that's really up to the individual, right? I mean, it's not like you, the only way you can compete in obedience is if you pattern train your dog.
Yeah, no, well, people say to me, but my dogs hate obedience. I have never had a dog hate obedience. All my dogs love obedience, but that's because the dog doesn't know what they're doing. They're just doing things with me. And I make it fun and interesting, and that's up to me. I do think some sports are like agility. I think for many dogs are more intrinsically interesting because by definition, it's different every time. You don't pattern train agility. But obedience, it's just a choice. You can choose. I did a webinar on creative training, and it was like just a million things. Like my scent articles were in the car, in the back of the car on top. So the dog had to find the articles and then had to get to them, which was not simple because she had to go over a crate. And then it was just a whole series of, I talked about what does your dog see, hear, feel, and how can you change it? So what does your dog feel on the ground? They feel grass. They could feel a tarp. They could feel wood. So can you do your scent articles with them on a tarp? Can you, what does your dog hear? Well, what kind of sounds are going on around the dog? You know, and I tried to break it out that way to help people realize that they could take one prop like a tarp and you could hang it. So mm-hmm. Now you have you a visual. Exactly. So it could be, but you could have your glove under it. Or I hung my mm-hmm. gloves in the trees that I had in the driveway, but they were just clipped low. So the dog could see that there were three gloves mm-hmm. out there, but you just had to go out, leap in the tree, grab the thing. And, oh, I put the scent articles on the trampoline. So the dog had to get on the trampoline. Uh-huh. And the thing is bouncing around. I'm like, well, but I thought my dogs loved those sorts of things. And I really enjoyed just thinking them up. And some of these things, like, it takes you 10 minutes. You're like, okay, I'm going to put the articles under the tarp. And then, you know, you like the dog knows it's under there. Now the dog's trying to figure out how to get rid of the tarp. I love watching it. It's so entertaining, the whole thing. That's probably why I like Mondio Sport, because it has a lot of that kind of stuff.
I feel like, I don't know if people don't do it because they perceive it as work. Like, to me, it's fun. I mean, yeah, I guess it's easier if I just walk into the building and the ring is set up and I just do the thing. But I would rather think up, how can I make it challenging? How can I make it different? Like you said, how can I be creative? And like you said, the best part is just watching the dogs figure out. Sometimes too, I think people oftentimes really underestimate their dogs, like really underestimate their dogs. Like sometimes they're so worried and busy, like coddling them almost, where I'm like, no, 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 your dog is fine. But I'm like, I promise you, your dog is fine. I find a lot of people go a little too far off the rails in that direction. And when I'm like, I try it. And they're like, my dog did it. And they're like shocked. I'm like, yep. Just sometimes just give them a chance, right? Like just get out of their way and and see.
Yeah.
And they will rise to the occasion because they are really smart. And I think they really do like solving, you know, like you said, solving puzzles, solving problems.
If you can get your dog to understand the concept, fetch means pick up and take the object. That's all the dog needs to know. Doesn't matter what they're fetching, where they're fetching, how they're fetching, fetch the object. And that's so much more interesting than it'll always be a dumbbell that's perfectly fitted to your mouth and it will never land in a bad space. No, just fetch the object. So I think that's...
Yeah, and I think it strengthens their understanding of the exercise. Like if they're always doing it in a pristine way, right? Like the ring is clear, there's nothing going on, go out, get it, and come back. Then they go on a trial. Now there's stuff going on and the dog's like, oh God, I don't know what to do. Or they get, you know, like overwhelmed. If your dog understands what you just said, pick up the object no matter where it is, no matter what the situation, then you put them in a ring and they do a retrieve and things can happen around them and it's not going to matter. They're going to be fine. And that's really just way more fair to the dog, right? Than under, for lack of a better word, underpreparing them and then putting them in a situation where they're going to be challenged. Like I know the ring is going to present challenges and I know that every single place is going to be different. And even if it's the same place on a different day, from the dog's perspective, it's different. So the more I can teach them to generalize the behaviors, the more prepared my dog is going to be that, okay, no matter what happens, I'm going to be able to do this task because I understand it.
Makes for fun training.
And they're going to be able to dig, right? Because they're, and like the thing you mentioned earlier, which I thought was really good too, is like when a dog makes a mistake, not making a big deal about it, because I think people worry that, I think this is still relatively prevalent. If my dog does it wrong and I don't tell the dog it's wrong, then my dog's going to keep doing it, which I don't I disagree with. Like, I feel like the dog's trying and I'll, you know, people always think I'm so crazy, but my dog will be crooked on a front and they're like, the front's crooked. And I'm like, yep, I don't care. It's fine. I'm not worried about it. But the fact that I don't make a big deal about errors makes my dog not worried about making a mistake in the ring. And I think that makes them more free.
Absolutely. More confident. I think creative training would be a problem if the dog thought that being wrong was going to cause them some sort of harm or distress, because puzzles are only fun if you can't lose. Can you imagine having a puzzle where there was a ramification for getting the wrong piece? Like somehow that's not a very fun puzzle.
And no, yet, it's not.
When we're doing a puzzle, we don't keep trying to put the wrong piece in, even though there's no negative reaction, because it's not the right piece. Like what matters is the dog knows what's right. You don't have to talk about what's wrong any more than when I do a puzzle, I know what's wrong. And the way I interact with my dog, bup, bup, let's try again. That is, it's still communication. It's still, we're going to do this differently. So I did something the other day. My dog came in to bark at a person in the blind. He's supposed to be barking. And he did something called a dirty bite, which means he grabbed the soup before he should. And that's a no-no. You do not do that. And he hasn't done it in a really long time. So he comes around, he took a little nibble, and the guy went, hey, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that, because he had to stop the behavior. And my dog's like, sorry, bark, bark, bark. And he starts doing it right. So as they come up, he says, kick. And he goes, do you want me to kick the ball? And I said, yes, because you said kick. And he goes, oh, because, you know, he made that mistake. And I thought, first of all, that mistake took place 15 seconds earlier. So that is off the table.
Right.
Secondly,
too late.
He's not thinking that way. He's biting because he's over aroused and he got excited, right? So if anything, kicking the ball a whole bunch makes it less likely that he'll do that, because now he's remembering what he's doing, which is playing a ball game. He's barking to get the ball. But it was interesting to listen to this lovely person, by the way, who thinks in terms of right and wrong. And you reward things you like and you don't reward things you don't like. And I'm like, yeah, but the dog isn't thinking that way. He's just like, and if you don't reward him, he's actually more likely to have trouble next time because now he's frustrated. So frustration is more likely to lead to the exact behavior I didn't want to see. And people don't necessarily understand that if your dog is flat, so you don't reward him for being flat, he's not going to get lively the next time. Like that, no. That's not going to work. Like you go ahead and give the cookie. If my dog sits crooked, I'll do whatever I'm going to do. But I do make a mental note, work on fronts. And that's it. That's a lesson for another day. So I need to know it, but the dog actually doesn't. As long as one of us is aware, and it's probably better if it's me, we'll probably be okay. But it's interesting because people struggle. And I see this on social media all the time. If you don't correct that, it's going to get worse. And I say, but it didn't get worse. Like we're looking at it on the video. We're looking together at the video and it's not getting worse. And they'll repeat it, but it'll get worse. No, but it didn't. You're looking at the video. We have it in front of us. We don't have to project what might happen. We know what's going to happen. And that's right. Just a struggle. And I don't know how much of that is just because we come from a society where things are right and wrong and you get punishments and rewards. And so they kind of struggle with the idea that effort is actually, in my opinion, the name of the game, because I can teach the behaviors. The struggle is with attitude and desire. That's where I struggle, because the reinforcement goes down, the pressure goes up, whatever. But the actual behaviors are not hard to teach. That's where the reinforcers and punishers may be a factor. But long-term, I really want the dog to love the training game. If I can get that, I can get through a lot.
I know. I don't know why it's such a hard concept. I mean, if you just think about it for yourself, like I think back to when I was trying to learn agility, because I never really learned it well. And it was super frustrating for me. And if my instructor had just kept saying, no, you're wrong, with no other information, because that's what people do most of the time. Not only do they say it's wrong, but then they don't even give the dog additional information, because they're like, the dog should know what it did. If they just kept telling me, you're wrong all the time, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, and then every once in a while, like, okay, that's right. After a while, I would just be so frustrated. Like, it wouldn't be fun. Why would I want to keep doing it? So, you know, if the instructor's like, okay, nice try, you know, turn your body a little this way, I think humans are the same way. I think if they just put themselves in the dog's paws, they wouldn't want to be told constantly, like for every little thing, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And yet they feel like it's okay to do that with a dog. And then they wonder why the dog's struggling or coming in slow on a front or something,
or doesn't want to play your game. I mean, you think about how you work with a kid, like you're drilling a multiplication table or something, and everything is like, two times two, the kid's four, you got it. Four times three, 12, excellent. Five times three, 13, so close. Five times three, and you know, it's just that you're still in the game with them. And if they get it wrong twice, there's a really good chance that so you say 13, the second time they say 14, you go, let's do it together. Five times three is 15. 15. Let's do it again. Five times three, 15. Yay! As if they did it themselves, right? Yeah. That's how you would interact with a child if you're making it a game. And a dog, kind of mentally, their emotional capacity is not that different. I mean, they didn't think this was a good idea. Just like the kid doesn't care about learning multiplication tables. No. You're trying to take something that is not intrinsically interesting or reinforcing. So in a case like that, how can you make it, you did it, so close. Like, guide them through, ignore the errors, and the errors just kind of go away. Eventually they go away because they're not being reinforced. And then if you keep seeing the same one, you change your setup so that they won't keep doing that thing. Then they get it right, you celebrate, and the dog's like, I like the celebration, so I think I'll do it this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why that's such a prevalent. That is how we were taught originally. That's how I was taught.
Absolutely.
Right? Is if the dog is wrong, tell them they're wrong. Now, we were never told to do anything other than to say you're wrong. Like, now I look at it, I'm like, okay, my dog's healing. My dog forges. I say you're wrong. Okay, how does my dog know it forged? It could have forged, it could have lagged, it could have been wide, it could have been too close, it could have lost focal point, it could have been lost engagement, and I just said no. Like, my dog doesn't even know what it did wrong or how to fix it.
It's so interesting because if you think about it as a person, have you ever had a student ask you, or I've asked students, where is your heel position? Like, show me on your body, where do you want your dog's feet in relation to your feet? Show me that. And then show me where you want your dog's head and neck. And most of the time, they can't answer that question. They're like, well, I mean, they know generally what heel position is, but when you're talking about precision, you really need to be able to nail that down. Like, you really need to have a clear idea. And most don't. So I'm like, well, okay, so that is complicated because if you don't have a very clear idea, very clear, then your ability to communicate to the dog is going to be about zero. And now the dog really is guessing. Yep. So now what the dog has is all your dog learns is what's really wrong. Because you know what's really wrong. You know what's really lagging, what's really forward. You don't know what's right, but you know what's really wrong. So that's all you have to work with. And that's very hard on the dog to like, well, I know if I go 1.5 feet to the side, that doesn't work. I don't really know what she thinks about 1 foot, but I know 1.5 is bad. And now you have a dog who's sort of doing that weird drifting thing in heel. But, you know, you got to know. Somebody has to be running the show, and hopefully it's the owner. But you got to be really clear, and then you can help the dog with a whole lot of yes when they hit the thing it is you want that dog to show you.
Yeah, I mean, I always drone on and on about criteria. Like, you have to know what you want the dog to look like. Because if you don't know, you're going to be giving the dog terrible information. And that's completely not fair to the dog at all. But at the same, then people go, okay, I know exactly where front position is. And then it's like, okay, my dog doesn't know front. And now I want him to be perfect. I'm like, no.
It's a process.
It's a process.
And also, you
know, baby steps.
It's okay. Like, in the beginning, I reward a whole lot of stuff I don't want to see with an adult dog or with an advanced dog. And that's okay. Like, hey, if it's your first few fronts, I don't even care what they look like. If you got in there somewhere sat, hell, I'm happy. Now, hopefully I put a platform down or I did something to make you somewhat correct. But the very first time you do it without props, without extra cues, I'm just happy for a behavior because I can almost see the dog going, I wonder if I'm supposed to sit here. You did it. I don't care what that sit looks like. Like, this isn't the time to fuss about. The sit will straighten out as the dog gets competent because then they remember all the pieces come together and it works itself out. Hopefully.
Yeah. No, I do. I think that it's just like you said, they have to be right more often than not. And they have to just be able to be relaxed, right? About figuring it out. Like, give them time to get there. I find that people either go in one direction or the other. Like, they want way too much perfection too soon, and they just don't give the dog enough grace, like, to just kind of head in that general direction. You know, the dog's like a year old and they're like, it's forging. I'm like, my dogs forge until they're like 3, because all I care about is are you having fun? You know, drive. Yeah, you're forged. I can fix that later. I'm not worried about that. You know, they want that perfection immediately, or they're the other direction where they're being way too vague because they don't want to put any pressure on the dog. Well, but you're just confusing the dog, and that confusion is uncomfortable. Like, you don't want to be confused. I don't want to be confused. So they're not, they're just completely unclear and loosey-goosey, kind of like you said, you know, 1.5 feet, 1 foot, like, I don't know, somewhere in this area.
It sets a hard thing to teach. It feels like something experience tells you with the dog in front of you. You just kind of feel when it's time to say, hey, come on now, I need you to give me a little bit more. Like, you just feel it versus, hey, let's loosen it up. And people will ask me for a roadmap. I'm like, I don't really know. I just know I get there. So sometimes I'm working hard on precision kind of drills, like maybe with platforms or something. And other times it's a little bit more of a shaping activity. But over time, slowly, it gets better. Like, as I look at videos, especially around healing, because healing is such a complicated thing. And most of my dogs do start out with forging, for sure. And some of them forge forever. I never do solve that problem. But I mean, in my mind, the idea of losing points for lagging is not acceptable to me. The idea of losing points for forging, I can deal with it. And usually I get pretty good healing scores. So in the relative sense, nothing upsets me more than lagging. And I just really, because it's lagging is almost always an error of attitude. It's an error of lack of enthusiasm. Forging can be 100 things, but lagging is almost never a happy dog. So just don't give me lagging. I'll take the forging. I'll take the bumping and the crowding me any day over lagging or going too wide. Those two just, they kill me. Well, going too wide and lagging. Some dogs just go wide. But it's just a process of shaping. It's like a, you know, you have a little piece of clay and you somehow you just know. And that's a terrible answer when somebody asks you. It's like, I don't know. I just know.
Well, shaping is like in my it's my latest obsession now, because I find that it's people miss pieces. So they break it down and they start with a small piece, and then they go from the small piece, and then they want to go to the end behavior. So they don't, you know, they don't do little piece by little piece by little piece by little piece. And then, or they're just not patient enough. Like, they don't even give the dog a chance to think and puzzle it out. I'm like, just be quiet for a few minutes. Just like give them a minute to try and puzzle it out. Like, they're trying to like overmanage the dog, right? So I'm pushing shaping a lot more. Like, because I think that's such people are like, oh yeah, I know how to do that. I think people in general could be way better at it, because I find that when I shape my fronts now, I shape my finishes, like I shape so many obedience behaviors, and then my dogs have the same, they're getting high success rate, high reinforcement rate. They're in their mind, it's a trick, because it's the way I teach them how to wave and bow and twist and spin. And then they have that same attitude about it. So I feel like if people were just better in general at shaping, and then shaped a lot more, patiently shaped things, I think they'd have a lot more success. And I think the dogs would be a lot happier.
I don't do a ton of shaping. I shape my retrieves usually for the hold and the pickup and all, because I want it done a certain way. I don't want to play retrieve. And I'll shape some stuff. And what I find is I shape my scent articles. Eventually I get to a point where I do very little shaping. That's not a good thing or a bad thing. I just find that I'm quicker with Allure. But I will say that I find that the things that I shape, there are many fewer steps to getting off the props. So if I shape my dogs sitting at my side, I find that I don't have to do as many steps. So I do love that. Like, when I do end up shaping something, I like how quickly I can get to the end behavior compared to if I lure it, because the dog is still thinking about where's my cookie. And I think a lot of their brain is focused on the food and not on what they're actually doing. I could definitely use, you know what, you should teach a class on advanced shaping for obedience. So people who know how to shape and how you shape finishes and fronts and stuff, that would be kind of fun for those of us who are like, luring.
I'm almost done now doing a workshop on shaping fronts, because I used to have this like elaborate process. Well, I got away from props just because, I don't know, I wanted to see if I could teach it without a prop. And then I, you know, had this like elaborate process for teaching fronts where I broke everything down, pivot bowl, off the pivot bowl. But it was so many steps, and my dogs, it worked well. My dogs really understood fronts. Like, they understood them like to the nth degree. And that's what I was like, I want you to understand it, but it was too many steps, and people like couldn't like persist in all the way through. So then I'm like, there has to be an easier way. And then I just started shaping them, and I'm like, oh, this is so natural for them, because I'm just shaping it based off movement. Dogs follow movement. So I just started. So I shape fronts, shape finishes. I don't like using props anymore. I use them occasionally. People, I find, have a super hard time fading off props. And I get that question constantly. As a matter of fact, I did a live today for Fenzi, and somebody asked, they always do, like, how do you fade off props?
Yeah.
So more and more, I'm trying to not even use them to challenge myself. Like, can I teach this to my dog without the prop? And a lot of times, if I just shape it, I find that that works best.
It holds.
Like, yeah.
I've been using props a lot.
Yeah, and once they, I feel like they understand it. It's weird. It's like I can teach it. And then I feel like it takes a really long time till it's really ingrained. If I shape it and they puzzle it out, once they learn it, now they know it.
I agree. So what I've been using props for a lot is fitness. And what I'm finding is like position changes. I love things I'm seeing there. I'm really liking the body control that's coming with a variety of props that I use for, you know, things. And I like that my dogs love their little props. They run over and stand on them so they can practice being correct. Yeah. And I like props when I want to add distance. So I want to work on your, you know, sit to down, and I want to add distance. I love that I can throw the prop back up there and just focus on distance because I know that the prop will cause them to be correct. So for that, I love them. And I, for the fitness stuff, which is really, it's been a bit of an eye opener for me lately, how much I think lack of fitness causes problems for us. And I think I look at a dog like Zen, who's a very big, powerful, strong dog. And I assume that means he's fit. And that's not actually true. He is strong. Mm-hmm. And he's got big muscles, but he doesn't have the little tiny muscles, the stabilizer muscles that he should have. He doesn't have the control of the small movements. And it's kind of exciting to realize I can actually improve that. So I'm having fun with my fitness journey. And that's why I'm doing ICE is in a gold level for creating a conditioning plan. Because, you know, border collies, the way they skulk around, he is such a border collie. You know, he's always creeping here and there. And I'm like, that cannot possibly be good for your balance. Like, we have to make sure that you learn all the other ways of using your body, because that does not look like, otherwise right. You shouldn't step like that, you know? So I'm hoping that obedience with the uprightness is balanced well from the herding, because those two are sort of opposites. So in obedience, it's front end up, back end sort of dropped, the weight goes in the rear, whereas in herding, they put their weight down into their front. So I'm like, okay, those are at least they're a good pair. But I just want to make
sure. You know, the herding behaviors are pretty natural and their structure is made for that. I tend to find that the dogs don't typically get injured from that as much. It's more, they get more injured. It's in life, chasing balls, chasing critters, zooming up and down the stairs. Believe it or not, more dogs get injured that way. Or it's just wear and tear over time, right? But yeah, conditioning is huge. I mean, it's super important. Every dogs in every single sport should be conditioned, and they should be on a conditioning program. I found when I was doing rehab, I spent years and years doing seminars, like bending over backwards, trying to get people to understand to do fitness proactively. And like, they never got it. They never got it until their dog was hurt. And then once their dog was hurt, they're like, oh, and then they were 100% on board for the rest of the dog's life. But
Basil,
for
that's
some
me.
Reason,
that's totally me. That's like,
Zay, I'm telling you.
And I'm like, oh man. And I'm still like, I mean, he was going to rehab twice a week. And even now, I can see things. Like, I know he is stronger on one back leg than the other, and one of his front legs is stronger than the other. And I'm like, oh man. So I'm working on it, but it's stressful because I'm in a sport that has high, high levels of expectation, physical expectation, much more so than obedience. So if it was just obedience, I wouldn't even be whatever. But oh no, the dog's gonna start throwing a bone around. But yes, live and learn. You know. So I'll just
ring
keep working
sports
on it.
And yeah, ring sports and agility are super hard on dogs. I mean, I've had herding dogs that have gotten injured, but usually it's either in a scuffle or, you know, I had border collies that were doing border collie competitions. So herding trials, which are like 500 yard outruns. Like, have you ever seen those things? It's insane. It's amazing. It's unbelievable what those dogs can do. But Yeah. Conditioning is super important, people. But I know, I don't even try anymore. Because I'm like, unless their dogs get hurt, then they're like, oh, this is really important. I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to tell you that.
Live and learn, huh?
Yeah. Well, we've been talking for quite a while. Thank you for giving me so much time. I wasn't even paying attention. I'm like, oh my God,
we can just rattle on forever, but we should probably stop.
No, forever. It's ridiculous. It's right. We could talk dogs forever and ever and ever.
Well, I'm so glad you are with the school and so glad you are in my life. And congratulations on your successes recently. Really, really cool to see such good things happening to you.
Well, thank you for the school and for getting me into the school, because it's been amazing. And it's just so great to be around so many other instructors. And like you said, so many students that are all like-minded.
Yeah, it's really pretty cool. Nice. It's a good community.
We all thank you, Denise.
Well, and thank you for being a part of it. Appreciate that. And I appreciate being here today.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Petra. Bye-bye.